Clustered Conversations. Clustered Conversations. By Weka.
Hey there, and welcome to Clustered Conversations. I'm Bob.
And I'm Josh.
And we're joined today by Maor Ben-Dayan, our chief architect. He's been here since the founding, came over here with the original founders and kind of put this thing together. So, Maor, how are you doing today?
Very good. How are you doing?
Good, thank you. So, you know, we were just kind of curious. I mean, we've worked with you now for a couple of years. I've been here three, and, you know, just get a little bit more on your background. So where did you come from? How did you end up in storage? What is, you know, why here and why storage?
Actually, most of my career was in storage, funnily enough, but it was quite a coincidence. After my military service, I had a couple of friends that pulled me into an interesting startup that ended up being XAV, acquired by IBM. And so that's storage. But I found it really interesting. So I'm still here. 17 years later.
Wow. So you were at XIV with Laurent back in the day. Was he one of the guys who brought you in, or is that where you met him?
No, so Liran was joined XIV before me. Omri, the third founder of Weka, joined earlier as well. I did a small detour going to study for my master's between my military service and XIV, but I never got to finish it. they pulled me in, and that was the end of it.
I remember XIV was pretty revolutionary because back then SATA was considered, like, you know, not enterprise. It was like the secondary tier is like laptop storage or computer storage. It wasn't enterprise storage. And when XIV came out with the way that they did data protection and everything else and caching, it actually elevated SATA to an actual usable storage platform within a data center. If I got that right.
The revolutionary part was starting to look at storage as a software layer above, on top of commodity hardware. Because up until then, many of the innovations were hardware related, and so much slower pace, and from that point on, it became a roller coaster. I mean, if you look at the last 15 years in storage, it's so much have changed.
Wow. So what kind of changed from sort of XIV being, you know, SATA based, block based, you know, going to this software defined sort of methodology? How did that lead to utilizing NVMe and turning into Weka?
Interesting. So first of all, NVMe happened regardless of XIV or Weka. I mean, it's a revolutionary media on its own. The concept of taking cheap and available components, hardware components, and turning them into something else, basically. In XAV, it was enterprise storage from SATA drives. And in Weka, it's taking off-the-shelf components, NVMe, and binding them into a whole data platform, taking care of all of the organization data needs, from highest performance to backup, etc.
So was it just a purely a business decision of, hey, there's this new NVMe thing, let's try a new method, or let's like maybe try and redo some of what we did at XIV to create a new company and a new product? Or was it something a little more organic with regards to, as you know, time has gone on and as technology has progressed, you've seen this new technology come out and, you know, there's been some epiphany, some, you know, muse that went in your mind as to how we can use this to do something more interesting and better than what's currently on the market?
Yeah, for me, it was like, it can't be that we're taking a hardware that is so intrinsically different and trying to use it the same way we've been using hard drives. And then the thought experiment began as to what can we do if we rethink it from scratch, and specifically around unstructured data, because structured data was so sort of an understood problem by then, but with unstructured data we still had all the legacy solutions. Mm-hmm. And it went to, so one thought exercise was, how fast and performant can we make unstructured data be? Can we make it as performant as structured data and basically do away with structured data? That's one thought experiment. Mm-hmm. Another was, can we do something that would be build a platform that would be cloud native, but would still make perfect sense for on-prem as well. So it went to different directions, but we ended up building Weka.
So Josh and I and Dave yesterday were playing around, or last week, we've been playing around on a 6-node cluster and running IO500 on it a bunch of different times. So it's 6 servers, mm-hmm, with 24 drives each, and yep, 200 gig cards, right? And we got we had 10 clients. So we did the 10 node challenge, and we got that to, we're now 10th place in the 10 node challenge with the run that we did, because we got to 200 gigabytes a second of reads roughly, and about just over 100 gigabytes a second of writes on this tiny little cluster. So if you guys were looking for unstructured data going really fast, you've done it.
Still need to fix the pfind though. The current pfind in IO500, it seems to be 1.435 million, and that's it. No matter how big the cluster is, it drives me nuts.
Yeah, there's something wrong with that pfind. But we were able to we built the cluster really kind of odd. We built it as a 10+2, even though it was a 6 server cluster, because we did 2 containers each. And we ran each half of the drives on one network card on each container. So it was a fun little thought experiment, but we got more throughput that way than running it as a single container cluster.
Mm-hmm. And still resilient to a failure domain loss. I mean, only a single loss, but you could still survive one.
Yeah. So we've been having fun because Josh and I get to play with some cool stuff. Josh recently built a cluster. It was a converged on a bunch of GPU servers. And we ran into the same thing because we had multiple NUMAs and AMD socket issues, right, that we run into once in a while. And we basically created a multi-container again, and you were able to get really great performance off that one, and also even do GPU Direct. So
I did a GPU Direct on that. And that's actually one of the major cloud providers as well that actually provides you, direct access to the physical underlying hardware that they have on those GPU systems, and only using 2 of the NICs. I didn't try and use all of them yet, still kind of working through the kind of regression testing or certification for those systems was doing 22 gigabyte per second using our DPDK stack. And GDS was a little bit slower. It only did 18, but still 18 gigabyte per second over to the links. And there's like 14 other links on it sort of thing. So it could probably do something kind of funny. But I think the more interesting and kind of impressive aspect of that cluster is that it's converged. Like these are the GPU systems and they've got what 128 total physical cores.
Yeah.
And I'm using 20 to run substantial amounts of IO and still leaving, you know, 108 physical cores for other CPU work plus the GPUs.
It's wild. The one thing that drives us nuts though is network. So you know, we keep running it. Yeah, it's always a network. It's either a routing issue or a port issue, or in this case that we were troubleshooting a couple of days ago is an RDMA over the network issue, which works on one OFED version but doesn't on the other. So we always run into weird networking issues is our biggest complaint. But once we get past that, Weka works every single time. It's super fast. So nice job. Just saying thank you.
Thank you. Nice to hear that.
Yeah. So, I mean, technology keeps changing, right? We've seen in the lifetime that I've been here at Weka, the 3 years, is we've seen technology come and go because we saw storage class memory get this big, huge push in the early days when I first showed up here, and then it's waned to the point where no one's developing it anymore. You know, that was a short 3-year run. We see QLC coming out. We've got, different form factors coming out. What do you see on the horizon of something interesting? I mean, BlueField, you know, it could be in networking, could be in storage, could be in CPU. What is it that you see that's neat?
So I do think QLC and PLC that will come after it. And basically NAND becoming cheaper and cheaper is the most interesting thing, and because at some point, I mean, there's always these graphs showing that the media alone, the gap between SSDs and hard drives remains at like 10x. Which might be true. I'm not a prophet, so I don't know. But if you look at the system as a whole, since there are all those other components and networking is not the least of them, when you look at the total cost of a system, the gap certainly becomes narrower as time goes by, and I do think that it's getting to the point where the media cost will cease to be a factor in deciding which way to go, and that would be an enormous change. There are claims that even if NAND became cheaper than hard drives, there are simply not enough fabs in the world to satisfy the demand.
Right.
But I guess we'll certainly test this theory in the coming years.
Yeah, we did have the shortage. Be built. Well, we also did have the Take shortage that. Of fabs the last. And after Indonesia had the flooding, right? We had that outage of fabs for a while there, so that was a rough couple of years.
that was fun. So I remember reading news stories about people going to like Best Buys and Costco's and anywhere where they had a hard drive in something, and they would go and raid all of the all of the external hard drives to shuck them so they could have storage for something. I think Backblaze did a lot of that too. They needed just something to be able to throw into their servers. We got to have storage. I don't care where you get it. I don't need a warranty. Just send your friends. Send your family.
Currently, it seems like the semiconductors industry bottleneck is actually professional construction workers, because for example, in Ohio, Intel is trying to start building the fab, but there aren't enough construction workers in the area to be able to build the fab, plus all of the other projects that are planned around it. So it seems like this is currently the bottleneck, and I guess it's not only Ohio. There's Colorado is trying to build a few fabs, and these are enormous projects. So we'll see.
Yeah, I've been to the Micron fab a couple times when I used to cover them at my previous job, and those are giant buildings with as much technology in them as I've ever seen, like robots and vats of chemicals and people wearing white suits walking around. It's almost a frightening sight to walk around.
Be careful where you step.
So what about Bluefield? I mean, we've talked about that a couple times here at WECA. I mean, or ARM even, right? I think they might be hand in hand because I think there's an ARM processor on that. Now we see the guys up in Amazon also heading towards ARM for their EC2 instances as well. I mean, where are we at with ARM as far as support platform?
So the first thing that will get supported, and we certainly look into supporting ARM, will be supporting it on the client side, where it's it's both more I guess current for customers because they would like to use the more cost-effective instances on AWS. And for the backends, there are some nice, quite neat plans for using Bluefield or other smart NICs, but there is some time to go before we actually get to it, I suppose.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to Raspberry Pi support.
Josh wants to build a Raspberry Pi cluster so bad.
I do. I really do. I want like a 1U, like 12 or 16, however many Raspberry Pi compute modules you can throw in there, each with just some small, like, 256 gig SSD in them or something like that, and just see what it does. I think it'd be interesting.
Yeah. I wonder what kind of ARM processor do they have there? I haven't.
I think it's an RV7.
Most recent. Really? Okay.
And yeah, they're pretty beefy boxes. I mean, I got a couple of generations old, and they run my whole home automation on them, plus my firewall and a few other things. So it's they're pretty beefy little boxes.
Yeah, it's an A72 quad core 1.5 on the new Pi 4. Yeah.
So we're heading towards a new GUI. You know, we got the S3 protocol. I mean, it seems like we've done quite a bit of change, because when I started here, we were a converged box, and we're trying to sell hardware was the first version. And then we went towards all software version and POSIX, and then we've really added a lot of cool protocols lately. I mean, how has that been for you guys to see, the growth of WECA? No, I can't even say it. The growth of WECA, out in the market to different places or that we didn't expect. We started with AIML, and we've kind of grown into all sorts of things. So how has that been for you guys to see? Has it been difficult to support, or is it kind of fun?
Well, obviously both. I guess it's kind of like taking your kid to the amusement park. You get pulled in many directions, and it can be hard, but ultimately it's great fun, because you find yourselves in places doing stuff that you didn't quite think you didn't plan for. Yeah, so for example, M&E was, well, we knew we'll want to go there someday, but kind of got pulled into it without, without prior planning, and it's a fine, it's a fun ride. It does force us to accelerate plans around, for example, SMB. Mm-hmm. But ultimately, if you have if somebody cares about your product and it really makes a difference to them, it's great. That's the reason we get up in the morning at the end of the
day. I think, yeah, we started out with M&E, I think, in the cloud, and we had a few customers really purchase it and start running it without even telling us, and, you know, kind of grew and grew and grew. And then they asked for features, and we've been adding it. And recently, I think we've had a number of on-prem wins with M&E. I've been involved with a couple of them. And a lot of those have been around the SMB stack and being mm-hmm. able to do the line speed SMB that we're able to do now. So I've got, you know, one guy doing color correction at 8 gigs. We got another one trying to do, I think, 16K video projection onto a giant screen. Mm-hmm. So it's it's fascinating to see, you know, the quick adoption within the market that often takes a little while to get used to something. But you know, we've been doing both because we can do the reads and the writes. We also got back into another customer in a weird kind of use case that we normally didn't think of, is as a VTL, again, to be a backup target for a large database because they need to back up at 60 gigs a second. There's not much that can do it. And so here comes Weka walking in, throw our system down there and get them backing up again. So yeah, it's fun to see these new use cases kind of pop in. How is that?
When you first start going into a new field, it's there's always the learning curve and the pain that comes.
Your growing pains. Yeah.
With it, yes. So.
Yeah, but yeah, you know, I think
looking back, it's always fun. I mean, an experience is trauma in retrospective, I suppose.
Well, the neat part is, since it is unstructured data, it's not structured. There doesn't need to be some sort of interesting input, right? As long as something can point to a file system, we can usually handle it, a lot of it. There's, you know, a few corner cases where we've run into issues and we need some development, but a lot of that middle workloads, we kind of fit in nicely and do a good job in without trying anything, right? I've walked into places with software build and we've done fantastic. Walked into places that do, you know, any kind of animation and it rendering, it fits in nicely. So, you know, the core business we can do really well. It's the niche that we're working on right now. I think those are the parts that are going to take us time to develop.
The integrations. Ultimately, yeah, the core Weka product can very well handle any workload that you throw at it, and it's been one of the keystones when we started thinking of how to architect the product. There are always the integrations, and it's as we learned, it's those are extremely important to customers. So we're putting a lot of effort in making the whole experience good for for them.
Awesome. Yep. Cool. I think I have one more I was going to ask you about, just Weka-wise and protection-wise. I know we got erasure coding. How'd you guys decide on erasure coding versus RAID? I mean, that's like the, you know, standard storage has always been hardware RAID or hardware based or, you know, something that managed it. I know XIV, you guys did a little bit of software stuff, but how'd you guys decide on the way that we do things here? Because we can group servers and we can group racks and we can group availability zones into a protection. Failure domains. So how'd you guys decide on that? Because that's been a really cool feature that I don't think we exploit enough.
Yeah, so the thought track was, we want to be able to do something that will scale to to be dramatic, unheard of proportions. So if we keep to this RAID concept, at the end of the day, a failure is handled by a very small amount of resources. And since the application ultimately reads randomly, and if it's not a single application, then if you aggregate 100 applications running concurrently, you'll get basically a random workload. So once you have one hotspot, one place in the whole system that is slower, that behaves poorly because there's a small amount of resources dedicated to fixing an issue, you'll very quickly see this affecting the entire cluster, and this doesn't scale. We had to come up with a scheme where any failure will impact a large cluster. Well, as the cluster gets larger, a single failure will impact the cluster less and less. Mm-hmm.
Sweet. Well, we appreciate it. I mean, that was basically for Josh and I, because we enjoy, we try different protection schemes on the system to try to see what we can get out of it. So it's been, it's good to understand better how it works.
Well, so, having worked with, standard RAID right in the past, RAID 1, RAID 0, RAID 10, RAID 5, RAID 15, RAID whatever, 6, RAID DP, et cetera, and even, a bunch of different kinds of Reed Solomons at different widths and stripe lengths and parity, et cetera. Kind of having the simplicity that we have of, it's interesting. It's not as wide and dramatic as maybe some other companies go to with, many hundreds of data like blocks to some, 16 or 30 parity or something like that. We're much, much easier. I almost said simpler, but like easier, much more sort of manageable, something you actually wrap your head around, kind of seeing or hearing how that sausage was made is interesting.
Yeah. Well, thank you for also, becoming a software-based platform, because, some of our competitors that we've worked for before, they're hardware-based platforms, and it was to get any kind of new technology, it was a 2-3 year slog of waiting for it. Hey, I need another 16 gigs of RAM. Okay, well, we'll put that in the next revision, which is 6 months away. Right. It's so much different here. Basically, if I need 16 more gigs of RAM in a system to maintain more metadata, I can have the customer just pop in a couple more DIMMs and we're off and running. It's unreal.
Or PCI Gen 4.
Exactly.
Our customers had it even before we had it in the lab. And running just fine.
Yeah, yeah, PCI Gen 5 is around the corner too. And that was kind of it was an interesting thing to watch, because PCI Gen 3 lived with us for so long. And all of a sudden Gen 4 comes out and we're so excited that it's here. And like a year later, like, okay, Gen 5 is coming out next year. What happened?
Yeah, and it's actually going to be on the market. That's the wild part. It's not just, hey, they've announced that there's this new standard and eventually somebody will get around to it. It's like, no. It's coming now.
Yeah, one of our customers actually asked us to architect something with 400 gig networking already. So we're already starting to design Gen 5 systems to get that first generation out there. And like, it'll work. It's just our software will run on it just like it does on everything else, because it just runs. So
yeah,
cool.
And it will be been faster. So
it's actually going to be, I think, really interesting to see that. Like previously, it's been the network's been the bottleneck, or the, you know, the PCI bus has been the bottleneck. I think with 5, it's going to be the CPUs. The processor is now going to be the bottleneck until we get like IPC improvements above what we've seen with the PCIe express lanes and networking, where it doubles every generation. Like IPC doesn't double on the processors every generation. It's usually 15, maybe 20% gains if you're lucky, generation to generation, not 100%. So that'll be interesting for me at least to watch that unfold.
Yeah, I think that the ratios, it's interesting. Yeah, like 24 drives per host, 24 Gen 5 drives per host is going to be or be able to push a tremendous amount of throughput. And yeah, it's going to be a challenge. Even cramming it, pushing it out to the network, even with 400 gig NICs, is going to be a challenge. But I suppose 800, with the rate of advance in networking over the last few years, 800 gig is probably not that far away either. So yeah, at some point, CPUs will become the problem.
Oh, man, my gigabit home network sounds slower and slower every day.
but then we'll have Bluefield as to the rescue.
There we go.
After you run my cables again. All right, cool. Well, thank you, awesome. Maur. I mean, it's been fantastic getting to know you more. Indeed. And understand kind of where we're going.
Great conversation. And,
so thank you so much. And so for Cluster Conversations, I'm Bob.
And I'm Josh.
And thanks for joining us. Thanks very much. Time.